So I'm calling this talk When Practice Evades Us. And I know some of you are relatively new to practice, so it's sometimes very hard to get started in a practice. And this might be relevant to you in some of those ways. And many of you have been practicing for many, many years and have probably experienced times in your lives where the practice was challenging to get into. And as typical in my talks, I try to talk about what's real and alive for me in this moment. For me, my emotions have been so overwhelming over the last week and a half that I've been really having trouble practicing, at least in the way that I typically practice. So, what happens to our practice when we're overwhelmed? Our practice can face challenges in different ways for different people. And for me, the practice can be elusive when my emotions are overwhelmingly powerful. I've heard a lot of Dharma talks and teachings about how to work with challenging emotions, as many of you have. I've worked with K-12 and university teachers and published practices to help them learn to manage their stress and work with adversity. But this past week was extremely humbling, and I found that all of my practices seemed to elude me when I needed them the most. I just wonder, has this ever happened to any of you? Were you just having trouble connecting with the practice? So you're going along in practice, and you're often feeling like you're making progress in mindfulness or along your spiritual path. And then something disturbing happens in life, and suddenly you're swept up into dukkha, suffering, and you've lost your way. Last week, a series of intense emotions overwhelmed me. There is intense grief and sorrow for Yeonsu and her family. And as you all know, when you're experiencing grief, it comes, in unexpected ways at unexpected times, and it just hits you hard. And so I've been experiencing that. And then it's been followed by anger, which is a really unusual emotion. Those of you who know me, I don't know if you've ever seen me angry. Probably not, because it just doesn't happen a lot in my experience. But I had intense anger later in the week involving a work situation in which I felt publicly mistreated. And it was this combination of such intense emotions that really sent me over the edge. I couldn't sit in silence. I couldn't sit still or follow one single breath. And a sea of intense feelings occupied my every waking moment, and while sleep eluded me for about 3 days. So by the end of the week, this past Friday, I was a mess. I was really completely unraveling. And it occurred to me that I was scheduled to offer this Dharma talk in a couple of days, and I wondered, how could I offer any teachings when I myself was having trouble meditating or touching silence and peace amidst the havoc going on in my heart and in my mind? So I was really carefully considering asking another teacher to offer tonight's Dharma talk in my place. After all, shouldn't we practice what we preach, so to speak? And my husband, Elliot, suggested that I had something to offer by sharing what was real for my practice or lack thereof, recognizing that often teachers appear to have transcended our struggle, when in reality, we struggle just like everyone else. So I offer this Dharma talk in the midst of dukkha, in the midst of my personal struggles and our collective challenges. So when practice evades you, what do you do? Sometimes the best we can do is notice what's happening within. Even if we have trouble sitting still or engaging in other mindful or spiritual practices, it's just noticing that. And perhaps the cumulative results of over 30 years of practice, when I found myself challenged by overwhelming emotions, was that while I couldn't sit still for any sustained period of time, I was almost painfully aware of exactly what I was feeling, where in my body I was feeling it, and how absurdly bonkers my mind had gone. I could feel that I was on the mind train, and so, in a sense, that's the practice, just to know. Just the simple knowing of where you're at in that moment. I was on the mine train, charging down the tracks at 100 miles per hour, and hard as I might try, I could not stop the train. And the question occurred to me, what happens when you try to stop a train going 100 miles per hour? You can't stop it by slamming on the brakes, right? The passengers are just going to go flying out of their seats. You have to just stop giving the train fuel. Forcing myself to sit in silence felt like stopping a train barreling down the tracks at 100 miles an hour. Stopping giving the train fuel was like lifting my foot off the pedal and slowly coming to a stop over time, so that I could be in a place where I could get off the train and begin the meditation practice. So, throughout the day this past Friday, I slowly lifted my foot off of the accelerator. And I must admit that it was not entirely clear to me at the time that I was doing this. And it was not as intentional as it might sound now. Rather, the process of stopping adding fuel so that I could just begin what is my regular practice to sit what is with whatever is happening in the moment was just as messy as the rest of the experiences of the week. But slowly, in time, I found myself lifting my foot off the pedal. And images continued to fly through my mind at lightning speed. But I stopped, what happened was that I stopped adding narrative. Like I stopped adding a storyline to the images. I just watched the carousel of images fly by. So, some of this is like really messy, and I'm sorry to share with you that, for example, I saw myself spitting at some of the people who I had felt undermined me. Of course, in my mind, this did not actually happen, but I was just watching the images and I saw myself spitting at them. At some of these people who I felt like had really hurt me. And rather than rewind and replay over and over again what it was that they did that so upset me, I just watched myself spitting at them. And soon the image became kind of comical. Like it started to become really strange and bizarre, and I began to laugh at myself and the storyline, they were so wrong and they were so hurtful, just began to loosen up. So I share these experiences with you to keep things real. In time, by slowly stopping myself from retelling story after story, I could begin to meet myself exactly where I was. In one moment, feeling tremendous sorrow, in another moment, feeling intense anger. When the shoulds started arriving, I should be honoring Yansu and her family and not getting wrapped up in the anger around feeling like I and the graduate program that I direct had been attacked. I just noticed that guilt was arising too. So meeting each moment exactly as it is about taking the middle path. Idealizing what our practice should look like and forcing ourselves into narrow boxes of practice can lead to what's been called spiritual bypassing. In the midst of the intense emotion, I could have forced myself to sit still. I could have focused on my breath and attended to the inner silence in which all experiences arise and pass. However, entering that field of silence, while ever present and real, can carry us away from other very real experiences that we have as human beings. That's the spiritual bypass. Alternatively, grasping onto our experiences, playing and replaying and fueling our stories also leads to more suffering. The middle path, it's just being with whatever is. As we allow the train to slow down, taking our foot off the accelerator, noticing what's happening in the moment without adding more storyline, we're able to more fully meet each moment as it is. Slowly, moment by moment, the train comes to a stop. We can then meet the hard moments in silence. But imposing that silence before you're ready is like forcing a train to stop when it's going 100 miles per hour. I have found that taking my foot off the pedal is just a real act of self-compassion. Then the silence has a space to arise and be noticed, while we concurrently honor and feel the emotions that also arise in this space. And it's from here that peace, compassion, the wisdom and kindness that we wish for naturally arise. So often we feel like the practice should be doing something for us. But ultimately everything becomes grist for the mill, even the feeling that the practice is inaccessible. In the end, a meditative orientation folds you back into simply being with whatever is. So I'd like to take some time to silently reflect on how this might be true in your own lives. And I have a few questions to ask. And I'm just going to pause for about a minute between each question, maybe a little less, but just a little pause, a little time for you to reflect for yourself on each of these questions. The first question is, have you ever found yourself in unfavorable circumstances, either overwhelmed by emotions or life in some way? A meditation practice eluded you. How did you get back to the practice, or what helped you return to your practice? Or if you're just beginning a practice, what are some things that are helping you get started maintaining a meditation practice in your life? Do you have a sense of the way an ideal practice looks like for you? Try to imagine in detail, like, what does the ideal practice look like? Are there times when practice didn't go the way you thought it should go, or you felt like it should look a particular way? For those of you who've been practicing for a while, even just for a few months, how has practice shifted for you over time? Are there elements of your practice that have persisted over time? And how does your practice look differently now than it did when you first began meditating? So Buddhism offers some instruction for when we're having trouble meditating and seeing clearly. And they call these the hindrances and practices around hindrances to practice. And the hindrances are also called the five forces of distraction. So I thought I'd share a little about the hindrances, as identifying when hindrances are operating and which ones are predominant in any given moment can help us be with what is. And each hindrance also has a specific antidote that can help us reinvigorate or return to practice. So, the five hindrances or forces of distraction, and they're common to all of us, but we tend to have a predominant one. So you might consider, like, which one tends to be emphasized in your practice most. The five are grasping, or sensual desire, or just wanting things to be a certain way, aversion, or ill will toward others. I love the term sloth and torpor. The very Buddhist terms really mean sleepiness, restlessness. This is like anxiety and agitation. And the fifth one is doubt. And that's around doubt whether this practice is right for you, whether you're any good at it. Just all sorts of doubts around the practice. And there's an ancient metaphor of a pond for how the hindrances obscure clarity of the mind. And when the pond is clear, it's like clear seeing. The surface is still, and the water reflects reality clearly. when we're grasping or we have strong sensual desire or wanting things to be a certain way, that's like looking into a pond that's been dyed. It's like seeing through rose-colored glasses. I need it to be this way. I'm going to grasp it and make, want my practice or anything in life. When we grasp, we suffer. And the antidote, there's antidotes to each of these. The antidote to grasping is reflecting on the impermanence of all things. So when we grasp, we want things to be a certain way. We're trying to, hold life still. And like, we want this. When we reflect on the impermanence of all things, we can start to see that life is ever changing and that grasping only creates rote burn. It only creates more suffering. The second hindrance is aversion or ill will toward another. Like, I experienced some pretty strong aversion toward these reviewers of our program who I felt misrepresented a lot that was going on in our program, the sociology department at NAU, which I meant to mention. So aversion is like heat. It's like the water in the pond is boiling. It's a very destructive emotion. And the antidote is reflection on the interconnection of all life. It's like recognizing that others are just like us and they want the same things in life. And they're trying to do their best given their life circumstances. And when we really reflect on the interconnection of all life and how we share our common humanity, this leads to cultivating compassion. The third hindrance, sloth and torpor or sleepiness, it's like having a thick algae growing across the pond. There's no reflection possible except for the difficult work of pulling all the algae out. And so you might notice in your practice, especially I find at night, that there is a sense of like sleepiness. It's really hard to focus. And sometimes it's because we really are lacking sleep, but often it's just because we end up in this kind of like very lazy state of mind. And the antidote is to stand up, go outside into the fresh air, go for a walk, splash water on your face, begin again. So often during retreats, you'll see people just like in the middle of a long sit, stand up. And often that's to help them with this hindrance. Hindrance to practices. The fourth is restlessness or anxiety. And in the pond metaphor, that's like the wind is churning up the pond's surface. This is my predominant hindrance. But we have them all. So just recognizing what's dominant in your experience. The antidote to this is to do more directed mindfulness practices. Like the counting breaths that I mentioned during our sit. Or you can try a body scan. There's lots of good guided body scans and guided meditations. On Insight Timer, I find, is a really good podcast for those. You could do metta, loving kindness meditation. I do a lot of chakra meditation, where I'm directing my attention to the seven chakras in the body, focusing on the energy of each chakra. And that like focused attention really helps with the restlessness. And the fifth one is doubt. With the pond metaphor, that's like water, the water is filled up with mud. And we lack confidence in the practice. We're not sure we're doing it right or that it's very beneficial. And the antidote to that is to ask questions, read books, come to the discussion after the talk on Monday nights, come to the Wednesday night discussions, read books that help inspire or re-inspire your practice. So if you found resonance with one or more of these hindrances in your practice, one opportunity that our Sangha is offering is to sign up for practice check-ins with Dharma leaders. And you can find that information on the FIMC website. It can be really helpful to explore one or more of the hindrances and go deeper with a teacher. So I really encourage and recommend you all to use that new offering that the teachers have come together to provide. So just winding up the talk, coming back into the body, into your breath. Connecting this moment. Being with what is. May the fruits of this practice go to the benefit of you and others. May the fruits of this practice go to the benefit of Yansu and her family. May all beings be free from suffering. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.